Lauren Isley, what can I say? I only recently read him for the first time, and he's now one of my favorite authors. I'm John Waugh. For my 2 cents this week, I'm reading from the chapter The Innocent Fox in Isley's book, The Star Thrower. Here is Lauren Isley.
The episode occurred upon an unengaging and unfrequented shore. It began in the late afternoon of a day devoted at the start to ordinary scientific purposes. There was the broken prow of a beached boat subsiding in heavy sand, left by the whim of ancient currents a long way distant from the shifting coast. After my companions had taken their photographs and departed, their persistent voices were immediately seized upon and absorbed by the extending immensity of an incoming fog. The fog trailed in wisps over the upthrust ribs of the boat. For a time I could see it fingering the tracks of some small animal, as though engaged in a belated dialogue with the creature's mind. The tracks crisscrossed a dune, and there the fog hesitated as though puzzled. Finally it approached and enwrapped me, as though to peer into my face. I sat down then and rested with my back against the overturned boat. All around me the stillness intensified, and the wandering tendrils of the fog continued their search. Nothing escaped them. I closed my eyes and let the tiny diffused droplets of the fog gently palpate my face. At the same time, by some unexplained affinity, I felt my mind drawn inland. I am the thing that lives in the midst of the bones. A line from the dead poet Charles Williams persisted obstinately in my head. It was true. I was merely condensed from that greater fog to a smaller congealation of droplets. Vague and smoky wisplets of thought were my extensions. From a rack of bone no more substantial than the broken boat ribs on the beach, I was moving like that larger, all-investigating fog through the doorways of the past. Somewhere, far away in an inland city, the fog was transformed into a blizzard. The blizzard was beating upon a great gate marked St. Elizabeth's. I was no longer the blizzard. I was hurrying, a small, dark shadow, up a stairway, beyond which came a labored and importunate breathing. The man lay back among the pillows, racked, yellow, and cadaverous. Though I was his son, he knew me only as one lamp is briefly lit from another in the windy night. He was beyond speech, but a question was there, occupying the dying mind, something before which all remaining thought had to be mustered. At the time, I was too young to understand. Only now could the hurrying shadow drawn from the wrecked boat interpret and relive the question. I, the insubstantial substance of memory, the dispersed droplets of the ranging fog, saw the man lift his hands for the last time. Strangely, in all that ravaged body, they alone had remained unchanged. They were strong hands, the hands of a craftsman who had played many roles in his life. Actor, laborer, professional runner. Now, in a last lucid moment, he had lifted them up, and, curiously as though they belonged to another being, he had turned and flexed them, gazed upon them unbelievingly, and dropped them once more. And I, also a shadow, come back across 40 years, could hear the question at last. Why are you, my hands, so separate from me at death, yet still to be commanded? I could have sworn that his last thought was not of himself, but of the fate of the instruments. He was outside. He was trying to look into the secret purposes of things, and the hands, the masterful hands, were the only purpose remaining, while he, increasingly without center, was vanishing. Suddenly I was back under the overhang of the foundered boat. I had sat there stiff with cold for many hours. I was no longer the extension of a blizzard beating against immovable gates. I was a biologist, but I chose not to examine my hands. The fog and the night were lifting. I had been far away for hours. Crouched in my heavy sheepskin, I waited without thought. Finally, the dawn began to touch the sea, and then the worn timbers of the hulk beside which I sheltered reddened just a little. It was then that I began to glimpse the world from a different perspective.
If you're just tuning in, I'm reading from Lauren Isley's book, The Star Thrower. I'm John Waugh, and this is My 2 Cents. Here again is Lauren Isley.
Then I saw the miracle. I saw it because I was hunched at ground level, smelling rank of fox, and no longer gazing with upright human arrogance upon the things of this world. I did not realize at first, what it was that I looked upon. As my wandering attention centered, I saw nothing but two small projecting ears, lit by the morning sun. Beneath them, a small, neat face looked shyly up at me. The ears moved at every sound, drank in a gull's cry and the far horn of a ship. They crinkled, I began to realize, only with curiosity. They had not learned to fear. The creature was very young. I crept on my knees around the prow and crouched beside him. It was a small fox pup from a den under the timbers who looked up at me. God knows what had become of his brothers and sisters. His parents must not have been home from hunting. He innocently selected what I think was a chicken bone from an untidy pile of splintered rubbish and shook it at me invitingly. There was a vast and playful humor in his face. It has been said repeatedly that one can never, try as he will, get around to the front of the universe. Man is destined to see only its far side, to realize nature only in retreat. Yet here was the thing in the midst of the bones, the wide-eyed, innocent fox inviting me to play, with the innate curiosity of its two forepaws placed appealingly together, along with a mock shake of the head. The universe was swinging in some fantastic fashion around to present its face, and the face was so small that the universe itself was laughing. It was not a time for human dignity. It was a time only for the careful observance of amenities written behind the stars. Gravely I arranged my forepaws while the puppy whimpered with ill-concealed excitement. I drew the breath of a fox's den into my nostrils. On impulse, I picked up, clumsily, a wider bone and shook it in teeth that had not entirely forgotten their original purpose. Round and round we tumbled for one ecstatic moment. We were the innocent thing in the midst of the bones, born in the egg, born in the den, born in the dark cave with a stone axe close to hand. I had seen my miracle. I had seen the universe as it begins for all things. It was, in reality, a child's universe, a tiny and laughing universe. I rolled the pup on his back and ran, literally ran, for the nearest ridge. The sun was half out of the sea, and the world was swinging back to normal. The adult foxes would be already trotting home. I knew at last why the man on the bed had smiled, finally, before he dropped his hands. He, too, had worked around to the front of things in his death agony. The hands were playthings and had to be cast aside at last, like a little cherished toy. There was a meaning, and there was not a meaning, and therein lay the agony. The meaning was all in the beginning, as though time was awry. It was a little beautiful meaning that did not stay, and the 60-year-old man on the hospital bed had traveled briefly toward it through the dark at the end of the universe. After 40 years, I had been just his own age, when the fog had come groping for my face. I think I can safely put it down that I had been allowed a miracle. It was very small, as is the way of great things. I had been permitted to correct time's arrow for a space of perhaps 5 minutes, and that is a boon not granted to all men. If I were to render a report upon this episode, I would say that men must find a way to run the arrow backward. For just a moment I had held the universe at bay by the simple expedient of sitting on my haunches before a fox den and tumbling about with a chicken bone. It is the gravest, most meaningful act I shall ever accomplish. But, as Thoreau once remarked of some peculiar errand of his own, there is no use reporting it to the Royal Society.
That was one of my favorite passages in the writing of Lauren Isley, slightly edited, as it appeared in the book The Star Thrower. Lauren Isley's first book, The Immense Journey, was a knockout. I highly recommend it as a starting point. Check out our local bookstores, Maud's for Used, Islehaven for New, or visit the library. As yet another alternative, go to Neil's Mall. In one of the book alcoves, as you face the magazines, there's a drawer to the left at waist level. I've put a softcover copy of The Immense Journey in there. Take it, read it, you'll love it. Then return it to the same place for someone else. This has been My Two Cents. I'm John Waugh. Tune me in 10:01 p.m. Saturday night, 3:45 p.m. Sunday afternoon, or 9:45 a.m. Tuesday morning. Send me email at kloijohn@gmail.com. See you in the mist.